I think many of us probably got a taste of the hindrances during that last 20 or 30 minutes. Last time we had a Buddhist Essentials class, it was last month, and we discussed the four foundations. And this is a nice follow-on because the fourth foundation is known as dhammas or phenomena, or I like to think of it as the teachings. The Buddha said, one thing that you can base your mindfulness in is my teachings. And that is what we're going to do tonight. We're going to talk about the five hindrances, or I am, and then afterwards, Steve's going to talk about the three poisons. And the five hindrances are part of that fourth foundation. So when we're practicing with them, we're actually also practicing the fourth foundation, which sounds pretty advanced. And the Pali, it's called the Satipatthana Sutta, which really sounds out there. So welcome to the fourth foundation. And the five hindrances, as I thought about it, this month while I was practicing with them and planning this talk, I thought about, let me start my timer. I thought about how there are five fingers on the hand, and the hindrances to me can be thought of as like two pairs and an outlier for those Star Trek fans. So the first one of the pair is sensual desire. Sensual desire is the first hindrance. And sensual, I think in common knowledge, to me in common parlance kind of sounds like sexy, but the Buddha's referring to the senses, the five senses plus the mind. He called the mind the sixth sense. So those five senses that we learned in elementary school, taste, smell, sight, hearing, touch, and then the mind being the sixth one. So that's what he's referring to when he says sensual desire. And that can run the gamut of a little inkling, a little pull towards something, to the deepest addictions that people have that we might be suffering from. So it's that whole range of wanting something. That's what this is about, is this pull towards something that we don't have or that we do have and we want more of. So sensual desire. So that may come up in sitting as something like, ooh, what's for lunch? Like that would be the mind door. Or maybe you smell what your partner is cooking and you think that smell conjures up thoughts of, or it makes you just want to smell more of it. You walk by the flowers and you want to smell them. So that would be sensual desire. Because the hindrances are, I want to talk about what they are. I'll name these five and describe them, and then why they matter, and then how to work with them. So they matter because they pull us away from our practice. They stultify insight, as he said. So they get between us and enlightenment, very clearly. They get between us and enlightenment, yet they are, if we go through them, if we practice with them, which I'll explain how, that's how we can get toward freedom as well. So the first one being, let's do it this way, the first one being sense desire, and the second one being ill will, kind of the other end of that spectrum. We're not pulling something toward us with that graspy hand. We're actually pushing it away. So ill will meaning everything ranging from a little irritation, I don't really like that, to hatred that causes all of the ills of the world. So ill will. And so in a sit, that might be for me, remembering something someone else said that hurt my feelings or that I disapproved of. Maybe something my neighbor did with their garbage can or my garbage can, just a little thing. Or maybe it's a physical pain is a very common one. So I don't just have the pain. I actually have aversion toward the pain. So it's sensual desires that pulling toward and then ill wills that pushing. Well, I don't want that. So it's wanting something to go away that is here, or wanting it to lessen. There can be physical pain. It can be a situation. It can be noise. It's the attitude in the mind that is added to what's happening. So that would be the ill will, the second hindrance. So that's the pair of hindrances around grasping, pushing away, pulling toward, when it gets us off balance in our practice. We're no longer mindful of what's actually happening. We're caught up. The mind is caught up in this in this energetic pull. And speaking of energy, the second pair are energetic. So it's like an imbalance of energy. So the third one, the third hindrance, we've got, let me go back to my notes. We've got sense desire, sensual desire, ill will, and the third one, sloth and torpor, which some people were kind of referring to in the chat tonight. So sloth and torpor means, you know, like this sluggishness, this sleepiness. And it can be mental as well as physical. And again, you can imagine that it makes it hard to see clearly what's going on in our practice, in our lives, when we're clouded with sleepiness, with sluggishness. So the other side of that coin, the other end of that energetic spectrum, is restlessness. And one translator called it restlessness and remorse. So we're with the practice, and then we start to feel agitated in the body. And we get distracted because, oh my gosh, I'm going to jump out of my skin. I can't sit another minute longer. In fact, often restlessness, in my experience, has to do with what's coming up. It's not so much what's here. It's like, oh, I can't stand this another minute longer. I'm going into the future and thinking I can't much less 20 minutes longer. How am I going to do this? So it's like a bodily and a mental experience. It depends. It can be both or either. And then this part about remorse is interesting. That's the second half of this fourth hindrance, restlessness and remorse, which is about, and it happens a lot for me on, especially when I go on retreat, and the mind starts to calm down. And then I remember all these things I've done that I feel bad about, even if it was 5 minutes ago, coming late to the hall, or eating, taking too much of a, what I thought would might be too large of a serving at lunch, this kind of thing. Like, or it could be something really horrible, the way I broke up with that guy in college, you know, so this remorse, this like the effects of the karmic effects of my actions in the past. And this is part of that stuff that the Buddha said comes up very frequently with all meditators, is this restlessness and remorse. And the fifth one is a little bit different. There are those two pairs, the pair around grasping and pushing away, and the pair about the energetic tone. And then there's skeptical doubt, which is the fifth hindrance. And skeptical doubt, he described as like indecision, wavering. My word would be like wishy-washiness, or like analysis paralysis, we say these days. It's doubt, technically it's doubt in the Buddha, doubt in the Dharma, doubt in the Sangha, doubt in ourselves also. And doubt can be one of those, probably is the most dangerous hindrance insofar as it can be paralyzing to the practice. I can be sitting on the cushion and think, what am I doing? What is the point of this practice? I don't know what I'm doing. Did the Buddha even live? Did the teachings even really get accurately transcribed? You know, the Dharma, this is something from the East. What do I know about that? Or it can be a different version of that, like, oh, maybe I should be practicing metta right now. Or was it concentration? You know, and so it's this wavering. It's not so much doubt about are the teachings true, because the Buddha didn't say my word is the end. He said, come and look, come and see for yourself. Here is what I'm offering. Come and see for yourself. So the problem with doubt is that it keeps us from investigating. It stops us right there. Like I say, analysis paralysis. We're thinking, should I do this? It's like at a crossroads and you don't know which way to go. Do I go this way or this way? And we don't go either way. So that's the fifth one. So we've got sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness. I'm getting tired just thinking about it. Restlessness and remorse. And then skeptical doubt. So those are just identifying, giving you an idea of the lay of the land for what they are, and kind of how they work in our practice and in our daily lives too. So as I said, they matter. Why the hindrances matter is because they stultify insight, which is they hinder the development of the mind. In fact, this whole practice is about developing the mind, and the developed mind allows us to have a clean life, make wholesome actions, do good in the world rather than harming ourselves and others. So those two go together. This whole moral edge that we have in Buddhism comes out of our ability to practice with these hindrances, to be able to calm the mind, to get clarity, to see clearly, brings about wisdom. Concentration bringing about wisdom. It's not able to do that if we're unaware of the hindrances. Under the influence of the hindrances, we do what we should not do, and we neglect to do what we should do. Right? If my mind is clouded with aversion, I'm not going to be able to be kind to my neighbor when I want to go ask them about how they're putting out their trash or how they're moving my trash can, for example, something like that. And if I'm really craving some kind of attention from someone, let's say I'm really needing that, it's like a mental craving, I might overstep their boundaries and not be respectful of something that they have going on, that kind of thing. It's like clouds my behavior, and I don't live up to the ideals of what Buddhism sets out for us of not harming ourselves and others. One thing about the hindrances that's important to remember is they visit all meditators. They come at all times. They visit all meditators. And sometimes you can even have a hindrance attack, like a massive hindrance attack, which is like doubt. And then I get mad at myself because I'm doubting. I should know better. I've been doing this for a dozen years. Why am I doubting? Then I'm getting angry at myself. And then I'm getting tired and sleepy. And it can be a real storm in there. And that brings me to the metaphors that the Buddha had, some lovely metaphors I'll just mention quickly about how to deal with, or what it's like when we get free from the hindrances. So he has five different metaphors for the five different hindrances. So he described them as getting out of debt, like somebody that had taken on a debt to pay for something, and then he finally pays off that something and he's free of debt. And that's what it's like to be free of sensual desire. And then recovering from a grave illness. We're totally overcome with pain, we're racked with pain and sickness, and then the illness leaves and we're free from the illness. That's what it's like to be free from that ill will of the second hindrance. Being released from prison is what it's like to get out of sloth and torpor. And that feels about right to me. I've had that experience when I'm on the cushion, and I've noticed that if I sit after like 12 o'clock noon, I'll be sleepy. If I want to have a sit where I'm really alert, I've got to do that in the morning. Excuse me. And so the Buddha talked about it, getting out of prison. And it's like that for me sometimes when I'm just in that sleepiness, and then I start to get averse to the sleepiness. And if I don't see it with mindfulness, then it can be a real hindrance storm. And when that passes, actually, I've noticed as I sit that eventually I do become less tired, even though I'm not sleeping, I'm just doing more sitting, and I'll kind of wake up, and it is like being released from prison, I imagine. The fourth one is kind of a touchy subject for today, but it's being freed from slavery. This is what the Buddha said thousands of years ago. It's the metaphor that he used for being free from restlessness. And restlessness can have that, restlessness and remorse. It can have that kind of agitation where you're chained and you can't get free. And then when the restlessness leaves, when the remorse leaves, oh, I've been freed from slavery. And then the fifth, doubt. He said it's like safely crossing a dangerous desert. Imagine a man with a lot of money crossing a dangerous desert and not being protected and getting across safely. That was like being freed from skeptical doubt for the Buddhism, from the Buddhist perspective. So all this talk about how difficult the hindrances are, how they visit all of us. The good news is that they are not personal. The fact that they come to all of us, they are not personal. Like every conditioned aspect of reality, they are not personal and they are not permanent. So the way to work with them is to see them. That's pretty much the first thing that we want to do, is we want to walk that middle path between indulgence and suppression. So that's what, when I'm practicing, when I'm sitting on the cushion and I have that sensual desire, oh man, what's for lunch? You know, I have that pasta and I'm going to put cheese on it, and I've got that marinara that I love so much. And I start working that fantasy. That is getting me deeper and deeper into the sensual. That's conditioning more of it, and it's getting worse. It's getting stronger. I'm not in the moment anymore. I don't know where I am. I'm in the kitchen cooking in my mind, or even better, I'm eating. So that kind of thing is what perpetuates it. What can help it to release is when I say, oh, look, the mind is craving this thing. It's got those fingers out toward that sensual desire for taste or for smell or for the the bodily sensation of having eaten. So I've got this sensation drawing me. And when I see that, that's the linchpin really right there in the whole, pulling the linchpin out of that whole system, so that no longer am I lost in thought, but I've seen it for what it is. And all I have to say, according to the Buddha, is there is sense desire. Sense desire has arisen in me. And as soon as I realize that, I can sit back, relax, but actually the thought evaporates. I'm not suppressing it, and I'm no longer indulging it by being unaware of it. So it's around, the whole thing is about awareness, being aware, mindful, kind, mindful, curious attention. Oh, look at that. And the other thing that he suggested was to notice when there's no sensual desire in me. So the key is awareness, and there is sensual desire in me, or there is no sensual desire in me. And another way is to realize what it is that makes that sensual desire come up into existence. So noticing, the Buddha was really interested in how do things happen? What makes this happen? What makes it go away? And he's really into understanding his situation, understanding how things develop and how they go away. So that's another thing, is like, oh, I realize what happened was I heard a sound of the trash can in the driveway, and that reminded me that my neighbor had taken my whatever it is. And I can trace that back and realize, oh, that's how this works. That's me being at the mercy of a sound, and suddenly I'm not concentrating on what I wanted to concentrate on. This is me being pulled off of my balance. So the more easily I can understand this is what's happening in me, the more quickly I can see it next time. The problem with the hindrances, one of the main problems, is that there's no mindfulness present during them. There's no mindfulness, there's no wisdom, I'm caught up, I'm blind, I'm not doing the practice. And this is true for in practice or in daily life as well. Because usually when I'm in a hindrance, I'm stuck in it. If I'm restless, I'm working myself more and more. But if I see the restlessness, oh, that's restlessness in me, it drops away and I can return to the present moment. So I have attached in the resources I'll show you at the end of the class, we'll drop in the chat a couple of links for resources. And one of them was an article I read called What Mindfulness Is Not by Andy Olensky. And I think that he described this really well. The problem with hindrances, he was talking about mindfulness itself, but I'll read just a little quote here from Andy. And it says that mindfulness is an inherently wholesome or healthy mental factor. So it cannot function at any moment when the mind is under the influence of greed or hatred, even in their mildest versions of favoring and opposing. Anytime you want or don't want things to be a certain way, the mind is not being mindful. So that really goes to the key of the practice. And I think Steve will go into this in more depth, the source of our suffering. We're seeing how it works when we use our practice to look at these five hindrances. We're using that wisdom to actually understand how suffering starts and how we can free ourselves from it. That's the, like Steve was saying before I began, that's the importance of the hindrances, that they are difficult, and that is their value too. That's why the Buddha made them one of the four foundations, because he said, this is what you can look at and understand in your own experience, what it is that brings about suffering and therefore the end of suffering. Another interesting way to work with the hindrances is to notice which ones are strongest for you. Like I mentioned, that sleepiness comes up a lot for me in the afternoons. So what conditions lead to their arising? And you can learn from experience the positive forces that can overcome them. So there's a theory around the teachings that that we're a certain type. Like you might hear people say, I'm a greed type, or I'm an aversive type, or I'm a deluded type, meaning that their mind inclines toward a certain way of thinking. And I actually think I was a greed type who's becoming an aversive type. People joke about like I'm a greed type when the aversive rising, you know. So some of this is just fun to talk about, but it's an interesting thing to be on the lookout for. If you know that you are the type that has a lot of doubt, then you know how to practice with that. Oh, you'll be more apt to say, oh, this is doubt arising. That's what that is. Okay, I don't need to worry so much about what are the values of practice. I can remember what the values of practice are. So we can shore up our weaknesses if we understand where it is that we have, like what our Achilles heel is. And then just very, in my last minute, I want to say just very specifically some ways that if you know what hindrance you have, that you can counteract it. So a really good way to counteract sensual desire is to contemplate the impure. And this is just straight Buddhist sort of thinking where he says, oh, you're having sexual attraction toward an inappropriate person. Contemplate them aging and dying. Contemplate their dead body. Or if the food, you can contemplate it rotting. So that's an excellent way to counteract sensual desire. For ill will, you can imagine it makes sense that he's suggesting loving kindness. Sometimes that's a bit of a jump. So we do what we can with that. But if I'm feeling a little irritation toward my neighbor with the trash can, oh, you know, they're human just like I am. They want to be happy just like I am. Let me release this ill will and wish them well. Sloth and torpor, one of the great ways to counteract that is to contemplate impermanence. In fact, contemplate our own death and impermanence. That might wake us up to practice more with more fervency. Also, just technically speaking, you can open your eyes. You can stand up when you're sleepy. I sometimes lift one hand off my lap and just hold the hand a little bit elevated, and that will give me enough energy to stay awake. With restlessness and remorse, it's helpful to practice with a single pointed focus or the opposite, to allow the mind to roam all the space it needs. There's the metaphor of like I think it's a cow that's pinned up and giving it, if it's a crazy cow, you give it a wide field to roam in. So you can practice with this. You can play around. You can investigate. Like our teacher, Joseph Goldstein, says, whatever works. I really love that teaching, just whatever works. So we're practicing with this. We're investigating for ourselves what's our own system like and what works for us. And then for the last hindrance, skeptical doubt, we can look at what have been the fruits of my practice so far. What is the value in my life of the Buddha, of the Dharma, of the Sangha? So one last quote from the Anguttara Nikaya, which is the numerical discourses of the Buddha. And it is said in the teachings, if a monk, this is words from the Buddha, apparently, if the monk has overcome these five impediments and hindrances, these overgrowths of the mind that stultify insight, then it is possible that with his strong insight, he can know his own true good, the good of others, and the good of both. And he will be capable of realizing that superhuman state of distinctive achievement, the knowledge and vision enabling the attainment of sanctity. Just a little thing called enlightenment. Thank you for listening.